Yeah, if you can't read Hebrew, then, you know, it's not going to help you. So, you're out of luck.
This, you have to be...
No, it's not. So, this week's, we have a double parsha, we have Tazria and Metzora. Very, very, they are difficult parshas. It describes the details of Tzara'as, primarily. Person who is afflicted with the spiritual malady of discoloration. There are various types of tzara'as that a person gets. A person can have tzara'as on their skin, the Torah describes, and then the various laws and details of the color. How big is it? Does it change color? Does it change shape? Does it look...
Not leprosy.
It's not leprosy. It's often mistranslated as leprosy, mm-hmm. but it is not leprosy. It's a spiritual malady, discoloration of the skin. There's a type of tzara'as on a person's clothing. There's a type of tzara'as on a person's house. And then the Torah goes through, over the course of these two parshios, all the details of all the different colors and shapes and sizes and of all the various types and how we determine whether or not it is considered tzara'as or not. If it is considered tzara'as, then it has a status of tumah, a spiritual impurity, and the wall has to be destroyed or the clothing has to be burned and the person becomes quarantined. It's a whole long process. And I struggled in finding exactly what it is that we were going...
Is that something that a person can get cured?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
The cure would be... because it was a spiritual malady, it was a spiritual cure. There wasn't any potion and there wasn't any pill that a person would take. And so this is what we're actually going to study a little bit about this morning as part of that process. And the sages attribute this as a punishment for Lashon Hara. A person uses their words inappropriately, speaks in a derogatory manner about someone else, then what would eventually come around would be this punishment of tzara'as. So,
and that's supposed to only happen to Jewish people, right?
I believe so, yes. No, but it won't even happen to us outside the land of Israel.
Right.
It's an indication of a high spiritual person who would be susceptible to such a punishment. In the same way as very often when I remember someone's giving this example. A taste tester, someone who does for a profession, works for a magazine and does taste testing and writes up reviews. So they will be very, very careful about what they eat, not to eat foods which are overly bitter or sour, because it'll ruin their sensitivity to pick up the different flavors that are in a particular food. The rest of us wouldn't notice if that happened or not, because we're not on such a sensitive level that we would be affected by that food. Only someone who's on a very high sensitivity towards a level, towards a specific thing, will actually be impacted by that in a way that the others wouldn't even notice the difference. So it is in the spiritual world that we're on such a low level, we're not even on a level where we would be afflicted with these spiritual maladies of tzara'as. You have to be a significant person to get that. The rest of us, we're not there. I remember when I learned this during every day during Mincha and Maariv, so I speak for a few minutes in between and I learn different mitzvahs. So when I got to this mitzvah, I remember saying half jokingly but blessing us that we should be privileged to, you know, receive tzara'as. Right? Which is a sort of backwards, backhanded compliment. It's a bad thing that means we're speaking Lashon Hara, but you know, we're speaking Lashon Hara now anyway, but we're so spiritually sullied, we don't even get the tzara'as we're supposed to get. But it would be a blessing that we would be on such a level, we'd be living in the land of Israel, the Beis HaMikdash would be here, we would have a karbanos and the temple, and all of that. We would get tzara'as. So it's, you know, it's sort of a tongue-in-cheek, backwards compliment, but it's a blessing nonetheless because we are not able to get it today. That's just the reality of the situation that we're in.
Is that the origination of the word, the Yiddish word source, maybe?
No, I don't think so. It's an interesting combination. The Yiddish word soros comes from a Hebrew word tsar, which means to pain or cause pain. Mitzrayim, to be constricted. There's actual roots. And then the word tsaros is actually just the plural of that Hebrew word. And, you know, Yiddishized became, you know, I've got, you know, tsaros. It became a little Yiddishized, but that particular word is actually rooted in an actual Hebrew word of tsar, yeah, of pain. It's probably spelled differently in Yiddish, but there is such a root. As far as I know, it could be that I'm wrong on that, but I believe that that's... Okay, I had prepared, we're going to do something very different today. It was an experiment. You'll tell me whether or not it works, although it's not going to be a fair experiment. So I prepared a piece in the Rambam, in Maimonides' work, a major work that Maimonides wrote, and he writes about this concept, these two parshios of tzaras. So I thought, based on the difficulty of the text, this would give a nice overview, and it's a beautiful piece. We would do that. And the Kol has a set of translated Rambam. And I was going to go, and we're going to photocopy, and we'd read it together. We will go through his piece. And this morning, when I went to go do that, that one volume wasn't there. So I wasn't sure if it was that they didn't translate that particular volume because it was in a volume of a pretty esoteric area of law, or just that volume was missing. There are about 17 or 18 different volumes of the English translated work of Maimonides, and that volume wasn't there. So the experiment's going to be, because now I only have the Hebrew version, and obviously I'll translate it, and maybe we'll just read it straight in English. I didn't read the Hebrew words. We'll give it a shot. We'll see how it goes. But I do want to read through the actual text, whether or not I'm reading the actual Hebrew words. We'll just translate them, but to get a flavor for his approach and the background, and then the back half of the class will do something also a little bit differently. I want to share with you the approach of Shlomo Volbe. Zecher Tzadik Gevurcha passed away 4 or 5 years ago. His take on what he learned from this passage from Maimonides, from the Rambam. So that being said, I imagine it's going to be pretty hard to follow just straight through in the Hebrew. It's on the top half of the page. I actually forgot to bring the actual original Rambam down. So the Rambam starts off as follows. It's on the you'll notice on the top half of the page. There's something a little bit different about this part of the Rambam than everything else. Most of the Rambam looks like what the bottom half of the page is, which is the text of the Rambam is in the middle. And you'll see on the side and on the bottom are commentaries, a different type of print. So you'll notice for the 4 lines of Rambam text in the bottom half of the page, everything surrounding that is commentary on what the Rambam has to say. Most pages of the Rambam's work look like that. Here, there's very little text and a whole lot of commentary surrounding it. Because the Rambam wrote what we call a halachic work, he's describing the halachas he went and compiled all through the Talmud. The Talmud is a smorgasbord of laws. It doesn't ever have, okay, let's learn through the laws of Shabbos, and we'll start from the beginning and work all the way through. There's discussions all over the Talmud about Shabbos. It's concentrated in the tractate Shabbos, but you'll find discussions everywhere. And within the tractate of Shabbos, within the 24 different chapters, so the Rambam went and he said, I'm going to compile in order all of the laws and put it together in a concise, orderly fashion. And he took from everywhere and put it together. And so there are many commentators who questioned, who argued, who bring sources. Why did he say like this? Why did he say like that? You'll notice the top half of the page is just text of the Rambam. There is no commentary at all on it. So what we're actually studying is the top half of the page, which is the very end of the laws of Tzaras. And as I didn't photocopy for the whole thing, this is the very last page of the laws of Tzaras. And the back half of the page begins a new series of laws, something else to do with purity, impurity, ritual, starting the next series of laws. But you'll notice at the very top half of the page, there's absolutely no commentary on what he's about to write, which is his conclusion of all of the laws. This is the 16th chapter. He has discussed the laws of tzaras for 16 chapters, gone through all the various parts, the types of tzaras on a person's body, the type of tzaras on a person's clothing, the laws of tzaras on a person's home, how we determine if it is considered tzaras. If it's not considered tzaras, how does he purify himself? What do we do? 16 chapters of those laws. And then this is the very last page of that, the very last little discussion that he has.
The conclusion.
It's his conclusion. And the first thing that you'll know, which you probably won't appreciate because you haven't seen so many pages of the Rambam, it's odd when you don't see commentary. That's not unusual. He's clearly veering. I'm giving you this as an introduction to what we're about to study. This is not the usual writings of the Rambam. When Maimonides writes, he writes in a halachic base. He's not talking Musar. He's not giving us ethics. He's not giving us... I mean, there are parts of his works which are, but certainly not this part, which is discussing the intricate laws. But this is the conclusion of 16 chapters of discussion of the laws of Tzaraas. I'll pick up on the second column, and we'll read a little bit, and we'll see how this is working as far as the Hebrew and the English. Maybe we'll switch just to English, and we'll see how it goes. Okay, Zeh Hashinu. I'm in the end of the second line on the first column. You want to follow it inside a little bit. The Zeh Hashinu, what the Rambam has said until this point, there's just one line on the previous page which I didn't photocopy, is that the Rambam described that the word Tzaraas applies to all different three types of Tzaraas. Whether or not it's on the body, whether or not it's on a person's clothing, whether or not it's on a person's home, this discoloration, which we call Tzaraas, if it's white, if it's red, if it's green, the term describes the different colors that the clothing, home, or person's skin becomes discolored. Mm-hmm. And it uses the word Tzaraas for all of them. Even though there are different types and different categories, that's a generic word which is used to describe them. And now the Rambam says that which you are all wondering, Zeh HaShinoi, HaOmer BeBigodim UveVotim, this change, this discoloration which takes place on clothing and on homes, which the Torah calls the word Tzaraas, Eino MiMinhogo Shel Olam. This is not the minhag of the world. What does it mean to say the minhag of the world? It's not normal. It's not usual patterns of behavior. Remember, we have three types of discolorations. Person's skin, person's clothing, person's home. Now, person's skin is odd enough, but you know what? It's not crazy. We all know people, ourselves, who've had splotches. People are born with them. People have their skin sometimes becomes discolored. Not saying that it is normal, but it's the concept is not something which right away strikes you and says, I've never seen anything like that before. We've all seen people who have splotches of skin.
Yeah,
what about on your clothing? All of a sudden you wake up one morning and you take out your favorite blouse and there's a big red splotch on it. And then it grows the next day. And it grows the following day.
Uh-huh. And you send it to the cleaners and nothing happens.
Nothing happens. Right? I put it in the closet clean last night, and I wake up this morning and there's... Or the walls of my home. Go to sleep at night, and I look at the walls of my home, everything is fine, and I wake up and there's a green splotch in the corner of my house, on the wall. Says around, this is not normal stuff. This is not a course of everyday activity. You end up with discoloration in... where you find discoloration in your clothing, in your house. We get so familiar with reading through the parasha. Oh, Tzaraas. Yeah, we know about it. It happens on your skin or on your clothing. But you just woke up and you found a green splotch on the wall. Or on your clothing. Says Rambam, this is not normal things. This is not the way that the way generally works. Ela os upela hoya b'Yisrael. It was a sign, a wondrous sign, something miraculous above and beyond any natural course of events. Specifically, as Dina pointed out, b'Yisrael, kedei lehazhiron milashon hara, to warn them and keep them away from lashon hara. It would be a sign, it would be a way to keep us on the straight and narrow as far as watching our words. By the two dots, five lines down, if you want to follow inside. Shamisapir b'loshen hara, mishtanos kiros basis. Says the Rambam, let me explain to you the way that the process would work, because the Torah does not describe it necessarily this way and in this order. But what would happen is a person begins speaking lashen hara. Gets together with a friend, they start schmoozing, one thing leads to another, and before they know it, they're ranking on somebody else, speaking about all the derogatory traits that this person has, sharing all of these negative thoughts about such a person. What's going to happen is that the walls of their house are going to change first. The most bizarre of either to me, look at your wall, and you have this green patch, and it gets bigger, it gets smaller, you call the Kohen in, and he's looking at it, and he's measuring, and he's seeing. Im chazar, both the person notes and says, uh-oh. This looks like it's possibly Tzaraas. Something is going on. If he pays attention, and he's chazar bo, he returns. What does the Rambam mean when he says he returns?
Not much interesting.
He returns from his behavior pattern. He does tshuva and refrains from continuing this pattern of speaking lashon hara. Yitoher habayis, the house will become purified. So the first step, says the Rambam, is the person begins to speak Lashon Hara, and the first thing that will happen is that he will find Saras on his house. If he takes notes, if he pays attention, and he's able to think about why this is happening, and mends his ways, the house will find to be purified. The part of the process is the Kohen comes, he comes once, he comes a week later, they measure whether or not it's growing, whether or not it's shrinking. So it's possible that from the first time that the Kohen comes, he'll come back a week later, and things will be in order. Why will things be in order? What will cause the difference between the first time the Kohen looks at this splotch versus the second time? Says, well, the person has noted why this is happening. This is happening because of my actions, my behavior, specifically my speech. If I correct my speech, I correct my ways. I won't have to worry. My house will be spared. It will not be declared tsaras, and I will not have to destroy my house. A house that has tsaras, those stones that are affected have to be removed and destroyed. So if a person is able to mend his ways, his house will be spared. V'im amad birisho, but if he remains in his evil wickedness, and he does not refrain, and he continues to speak Lashon Hara, at shehuta tzabayis, so much so that the Kohen comes back, and he says, yeah, it's growing, this is a problem, they come back again, we have to destroy the house. They go through the whole process that the Torah describes, and it's declared to be tzaras, and we got to upend those particular stones. And he still doesn't continue, it doesn't stop, and he still continues to speak. Mishtanin kli ha'or shebeveso. The things, his leather couch, his chairs, the items that he sits upon in his house will become affected. Im chazer bo yitaro. And if he notices now at this point, you know, it's getting a little bit closer. It started all the way out there in the walls of my house. Didn't do anything about it. We have to take out those stones and destroy them. And now the splotch is creeping up, and now it's on my sofa. And if you don't change anything until you end up now burning your couch, got to take the couch out of the house, can't do anything about it, the Kohen comes back again, he determines this is a problem, take the couch out and we burn it. But you know what? He hasn't changed. So then what happens, says the Rambam? Mishtanin habigodim sha'alav. Now it's going to affect your clothing. We're getting closer and closer. First it was on the walls of my house, now it hits my couch, and now it's on my suit. I have this green splotch that's beginning to spread on my clothing. In Chazer Bo Yitaru, if at this point a person is able to mend his ways and refrain from speaking Lashon Hara, says the Rambam, he'll be okay. V'im Omad Berisho Ad SheYisrafu, but if he remains in his ways, that now we're burning my clothing. Take your clothing off, we're going to burn them. Mishtana Oro V'Yitzdara, now his own skin will become affected with tsaras. So the Rambam clearly sets up a pattern of a warning signal of what tsaras is supposed to be accomplishing. What happens to a person who now has tsaras? Yihemuvdolu mefursam livado. He becomes muvdol, separated. What do we do with a person with tsaras? We quarantine him. He can't be with anybody else. And he's mefursam, he's known. He's like, everyone now knows, this person's removed, not showing up to work, not showing up in the Beis Medrash, not showing up anywhere, he's taken out of his family. What happened to so-and-so? Oh, tsaras. Really? Do you know what that means that he got tsaras? That means for the last couple of weeks, first he had it on the walls of his house, didn't do anything about it, then it started happening to his chair, to his couch, we burnt, remember the bonfire? Yeah, we burnt his chair and his couch. Then it hit his clothing, and he's still going. Now he's got tsaras, and now he's all the way out there by himself. What now is accomplished? Can't speak Lashon Hara anymore. He doesn't have anybody to talk to. Now he's removed from his ability to share his evil words. He's not with anybody. He's quarantined all by himself. He can't sit and enjoy the sichas harishoyim, the speech of the wicked ones. Shehi ha-leitzanus v'loshen hara, which is making fun, leitzanus, poking fun, making jokes, lack of seriousness, and speaking Lashon Hara. That's how the Rambam understands the process of tsaras. Says the Rambam at the two dots, half, a little bit more than halfway down the first column. Val inyun zen, it's on this concept, masir batoira v'omer, the Torah says, yishomer v'nega ha-tsaras, be careful about the nega tsaras, guard yourself from getting tsaras. The very next pasuk says, remember what I did to Miriam. How do we know, says the Rambam, that I am correct when I tell you that this whole process of tsaras is a warning set of signals about speaking Lashon Hara, because the Torah told me so. The Torah said, watch yourself, guard yourself from tzaras. Remember what I did to Miriam when you left Mitzrayim. What happened to Miriam when we left Mitzrayim? So she spoke Lashon Hara about Moshe. What did she say about Moshe?
Doesn't have time with his family.
Moshe separated from his wife. Moshe said, I'm a Navi, I'm a prophet. It is inappropriate for me to be with my wife in an intimate way, because Hashem can come and speak to me at any time. So he separated, he didn't divorce her, but he separated himself from her. And Miriam felt that was inappropriate. Miriam said, we're prophets, I'm a prophet, your brother Aharon, he's a prophet, we've all had communications from Hashem, we are not required to be separated from our spouses, we continue having a regular family life. Moshe, this is an inappropriate thing that you've done to your wife, that you've left her all by herself. So she chastised Moshe. She said to Aaron, this is inappropriate what Moshe is doing. What happened to her? She got tzaras. She was sent out of the camp, and the Jewish people had to wait a week until she was purified again and able to join them in their travels. Says the Rambam, think about this incident. Harehu oimer hisboinenu ma'ira le'miriam hanavi. The Torah says, zochor es asher asah. Remember what I did to Miriam. Says the Rambam, add, not just remember, oh yeah, think about it. Think about what took place. And listen to how the Rambam breaks down this incident. She spoke about her brother. She said he did the wrong thing. That he's been inappropriate in his behavior towards his wife.
That's her opinion. It's not really Lashon Hara.
Listen to what he says. Shehi gedoyle mimenu bishanim. She's older than him. It's an older sister. How much older is Miriam than Moshe? He was 6 years older. I think Aaron was 83 years older than Moshe. I believe Miriam was 3 years older than Moshe. I believe. Certainly she was older than Miriam, than Aharon. And Aharon was 3 years older than Moshe. I believe Miriam was 6 years older than Moshe. So she's older than him. The Gidlo Soal Birkeha. So she raised him on her knees, so to speak. She was that older sister, you know, the oldest daughter in the house, taking care of little baby Moshe as he was being raised. The Sikhano be'atzma lehatzilu min hayam, put her life at risk. When Moshe's a little boy, what do they have to do with Moshe when he's born? They can't keep him around the house. Paro's after all the little boys of Egypt. Put him in a little basket, send him down the Nile River. Who goes to look after him?
Miriam
goes. Miriam goes, hides in the reeds, checking out what's going to happen with her little baby brother. Bas Paro herself, the daughter of Paro, finds him. What would you think was about to happen when Bas Paro found this little boy? They're going to kill him. The daughter of Paro himself finds his little boy. Paro instead does not. The daughter of Paro doesn't try to kill him. What then happens in the story?
She becomes...
Who's she?
Miriam becomes the nurse.
Miriam goes to the daughter of Paro and says, let me go find you a Jewish wet nurse who'll be able to nurse this baby. Little 6-year-old girl steps out of the reeds, walks up to this entourage of the princess of Paro, of all of Egypt, the daughter of Paro, and starts, you know, oh, this must be a Jew. Would you like me to go help? And the girl has put herself out for this little boy. And she's not speaking derogatorily about him, that he's got some flaw, he did something wrong. She made a mistake in calculating. She thought Moshe was a Navi like everybody else. She was a Navi, her brother Aharon was a Navi, and their status of being a prophet didn't preclude them from living a regular married life. So she made a mistake, so she thought Moshe is also a Navi, so he also shouldn't be doing this. Shehisves also l'shar neviim. That was her mistake. So the Rambam sets this up. Let's just note the type of Lashon Hara that was spoken. It was spoken by an older sister who has nurtured this boy, taken care of him, risked her life for him, and the type of Lashon Hara that was spoken was a simple mistaken calculation in saying he should be dealing with his wife like every other prophet does, when in fact he was actually a different type of Navi. There had never been a Navi like him before. There will never be a Navi like him after. So it wasn't like a mistake that she had some other template to work off of. The only prophets she's ever known all were like this. Here is another one. She didn't realize that he was actually different. The only one in the history of the world who was different in that manner. So she made a mistake and she said to Aaron, trying to defend the honor of her sister-in-law, not saying anything negative about her. Why is he treating her like this? Look at this poor woman. She's being left all by herself. This is the Lashon Hara that she speaks. What's Moshe's response to this? Is Moshe offended? Is Moshe hurt? Is Moshe angry? Says the Rambam, V'hu, I'm three lines from the bottom if you're following inside. V'hu, lo hayo makbid al kol elo advarim. He didn't care about any of these things. What does the Torah say about Moshe? Shenemar v'ha'ish Moshe onav ma'od. Moshe was exceedingly humble. His humility was such, didn't bother him, that she's saying about him, Moshe, you're like all the other prophets. So like us, normal people, if we know that we're actually different from everybody else, and someone claims that we're the same as everybody else, what do you mean? I'm different. I'm on a much higher level than you. Moshe didn't have that response at all. Moshe was onav ma'od mikol adam. He was exceedingly humble from all people. His humility did not allow him to, he was not affected at all by her words. So if in the scale of things, in the scheme of things, in the record of let's, you know, if we were able to put in front of us all the Lashon Hara that was ever spoken in the history of the world, you could put it on the table, we could talk about all the incidents of Lashon Hara that were out there, and we would see both the reasons why the person spoke, the animosity, the hatred, the revenge that they had on their minds, the impact that it had, how it affected the person, how it affected their family, how it affected their business, how it affected their life, how the impact, we had all that in front of us. Where would we rate this Lashon Hara that was spoken by Miriam, which had zero impact, it didn't affect anything, it didn't affect Moshe's life in any way, he didn't lose his job because of it. He didn't lose any friends because of it. He didn't lose his parnasa. Nothing happened. It was spoken from a loving sister who's risked her life for her to defend the honor of her sister-in-law, who she thought, because of a mistake that she was making, no animosity, no vengefulness, no attempt to get rid of it. You're making a mistake, Moshe. This is an unfair way to treat your wife. And Moshe, what's his response? Was he hurt? Was he crying? Did he lose his self-esteem? Was he shattered? I mean, in the scale of things, what is this? Says the Rambam, v'afal pichein miyad ne'encha b'tzaras. Like the words had not come out of her mouth, and she breaks out on her skin right away. We don't go to her walls of her house, then to her couch, then to her clothes. She gets tzaras right away. And the Torah says, you want to know the paradigm of Lashon Hara to keep in mind all the time? Zachor es asher asah Hashem l'mir. Remember what happened to Miriam. Don't remember what happened to some guy who, because of a streak of revenge, said something about this guy and he destroyed that whole person's life. And remember what happened to Miriam. To Miriam. You know, the Ramban writes, the Ramban Nachman, as we're learning Maimonides, now Nachman, and he writes, and the Torah says, Zachor es asher asah Hashem. Same way that it says, Zachor es yom HaShabbos l'kodesho. The Ramban holds it's a positive mitzvah. It's a positive mitzvah. And if you look in the back of the Siddur, at the end of Shacharis, there are what we call the six remembrances. Six times the Torah says the word Zachor, remember. And there are those who have a custom, which is actually based on a Rambam, a different Rambam than this, that says that whenever the Torah says Zachor, you need to, every once a day, you should verbalize, you should say, this is one of the six. Remember what Hashem did to Miriam. Out of all the things in our Jewish world, every single day, there is those out there who would say that a person should remember what happened to him. We're actually fulfilling a mitzvah right now. Aside from the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, the mitzvah of learning, a mitzvah of, as we're speaking about this, the mitzvah of remembering that which happened to Miriam, for the sake, as the Rambam says, not just for the sake of remembering, to know. Lashon Hara, this is a big thing. This is what happened to Miriam, who had all the right intentions. The scenario was such between her and her brother, all the right reasons, no animosity, no hatred, no vengefulness. And yet, right away, she is struck with Sarah. Says the Rambam, that which does not need to be said, Kal v'chomer l'bnei Adam harishoyim ha-tipshim shemarbim l'daber g'daylos v'niflos. How much more so, if this is the way that Hashem punished Miriam, how much more so for us regular folk, harishoyim, the wicked, those who are on the opposite end of the smart spectrum, who increase and exceedingly, excessively speak what wondrous things will happen to them as a result of their inappropriate use of their mouth. Therefore, says the Rambam, it is roi, it is appropriate for anyone who wants to be mechavein or chosav, someone who wants to strain his path, that he should walk an appropriate and straight path in life, lehisrachek mi yeshivasan, to distance himself from the sitting of such evil and wicked people, umiladaberimon, and you shouldn't speak with them, kideshelo yitpos odom bereshes reshoim, so you shouldn't be grabbed by that, because as we all know, how easy it is when a conversation suddenly turns to so-and-so and what so-and-so is doing and how silly it is and how inappropriate it is and how bad they look and how wrong, how easy it is to get literally like a suction cutter. And it's too late. You're in it. So says the Rambam, the trick is don't sit down. Don't sit down, because if you sit down, you're going to get into trouble. So therefore, distance yourself from the group. Distance yourself from being part of it. There is no greater defense to being part of watching your mouth than surrounding yourself with people who also are in the same scenario and are trying to be careful about the way that they speak. And he continues, we'll just speak with that outside, that even within those who sit and speak Lashon Hara, he writes, they don't necessarily begin by speaking Lashon Hara. He says, B'tchila marbin, the four lines down, B'tchila marbin b'divrei havoy. They just start speaking nothingness, things that have no meaning, wasting of time, they're just talking about things that have no value, they're not talking with, anything, meaningful comment. They start with that. And then what happens? They begin talking about the genus of tzaddik, and then from that they begin talking about derogatory things about the righteous individuals. From that they begin speaking about Nevi'im and the prophets, and before you know it, they're speaking about Hashem himself. And around it begins this, but it all starts with this meaningless chatter that has no value, and therefore the sichos is skipping to the end. The ksheirei Yisrael, the righteous and appropriate ones of the Yisrael and the tzaddikim, speak with Torah and in divrei chachma, words of wisdom, and Hashem should help them in their quest, and will allow them to continue in their successful endeavors of not speaking and getting entrapped with lashon hara. This is the Rambam. So I want to share with you how Revolver understands this. He picks up on something. He says, in context, all that we read is this piece. So you say, where should this piece have been found? This sounds like a nice Musar Shmuz. He's describing what happens to people who speak Lashon Hara, the process, the lesson to be learned from Miriam, who had all the right intentions, and yet you see what happened to her, how much more so the rest of us. Yet where this is in the end, the 16th chapter of a very intricate series of laws discussing Tzaras. And the Rambam just very smoothly flows right out of the details, 16 chapters worth, of Taras, from the house, to the clothing, to the couch, to the skin, the process, what the Kohen looks for, the size, the color, does it change, did it grow, did it shrink? And then he just flows right into it. And by the way, you should know, this Taras and then this piece that we just read, it's not a natural course of events, it's a spiritual thing, it's a response to Lashon Hara, and you see how serious it is, look at Miriam. Revolva says, wait a minute, I thought we were learning the laws of Tzaras. Now we're not learning a Musar Sefer, we're not learning a work of that. We're learning the detailed laws of Tzaras. And when you get to the end of the Rambam, you see, it's like, whoop. It's like he writes, it's like a curtain was pulled from before you, and lo and behold, it's as if you were learning the Sefer Chafetz Chaim on Lashon Hara the whole time. I thought I was learning the details of red versus green, versus this size versus that size, there was it on the wall. But really, that's not what you were studying. What you were really studying was the laws of Lashon Hara. You were studying a chizuk, something to give you strength about the laws of Lashon Hara. And Revolva says, you see from the way that the Rambam approaches this concept which he calls hislamdus. Hislamdus comes from the root of the word lomad, which means to learn, to observe, to see, and to take in. And you see from that which is around you the underlying message, something else that's there to be perceived, to be learned from that which is going on. And he writes, the Rambam does this regularly throughout his work, but here it stands out more than anywhere else, the idea that when you think you're learning the laws of Tzaras, what you're really discussing is the laws of Lashon Hara. You're really discussing the meaning, the significance, the severity of Lashon Hara through the laws of Tzaras. But you have to have your eyes open to that to see a person can very easily have gone through the first 16 chapters of the Rambam, learned it well, known it backwards and forwards, and never once thought, oh, you know what I'm learning? I'm learning about Lashon Hara. I'm learning, because you just would have gotten caught up in the details of what's really there. And Hislamdus is about understanding and seeing from that which you're involved in, really coming out. I'll share with you a story which just happened to me on Sunday, which is similar to this, not quite, but there's an idea there. You know, Sunday was, of course, the Holocaust Memorial at Greenwood. So I initially had another event that I was going to be going at. So Rabbi Feldman was going to be going to the memorial, and I was going to a different event that I was speaking at, which started at 11. Feldman called me right before at like 9:30 that he had to run to a hospital and he couldn't make it to Greenwood. Can I please go to represent the shul and be there, since I have my event at 11 back here in town? So that started at 10:30. I was going to go early, be there for as much as I could, and then pretty much right toward the beginning, head back to the... So, in our random, the mindset was I wasn't planning on being, I was going to be somewhere else. Quick switch of plans, and I end up by 10:15, I'm now at Greenwood, and I'm seeing everybody, and the last person that I saw right before I left, a person from the shul, says to me, so, you're here, are you the son of survivors? And I said, no, I'm here just, you know, for the shul. And I start saying that. And the words are out of my mouth. No, I'm just... And it occurred to me, I am. My grandparents were survivors. My grandmother went through Auschwitz. My grandfather was in the Hungarian army. My mother's side of the... That's my father. My mother's side of the family. My grandmother got out before the war started as a 13-year-old girl, got to Switzerland. Her whole family was wiped out. Yeah, I'm the son of survivors. And it had not occurred to me from 9:30 until 10... I was in a different mindset. Here I was going to a Holocaust memorial. I was going in the mindset of representing the shul. I'm supposed to be somewhere else. Or someone was going to be doing this and I was going to be doing that. He couldn't make it, so I was filling in. And sometimes you go through life participating in something and you miss the whole thing. I was so moved as I was like walking out. I can't believe it didn't even occur to me, this is for me. I am a survivor. I'm directly descendant. Here I was mourning with my family over Pesach that I had to be in Atlanta. My grandparents, who are survivors, they're still alive. They're still partaking in our Seder, but they're in New York. And my children don't have what I had where they could be at a Seder with my grandparents. This is part of my world. It's part of my life. I'm aware of it very much so, regularly. And I went to a Holocaust memorial event, and it just wasn't, I was in the mindset of, I'm going for X, because I'm Sister Rabbi of Bechekov, and someone needs to be there. And I found commitment. And on my way out, we go through life a lot like that, where we're doing something, but we're participating in something else, and we miss the event that we're at, because we're so busy doing other things. How many times, you go to a wedding, and sometimes I'm so busy making sure that I saw the people I needed to see, and I danced with this one, and I danced with that one, and I said a mazel tov to that one, and I daven mincha, and make sure you made sure that the yichud room was set up. And you go home like, I think I was just at a wedding. I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. But I just missed the simcha of there are two people who just got married because I was so busy making sure that the wedding worked in my role. And sometimes we do that just so often, especially, you know, whatever aspects of our life we have. Sometimes it's with, you know, a kid's performance, or sometimes it's with whatever it is. We go to something, but we're just too involved in making sure that it worked, as opposed to making sure. I sometimes find that with davening, especially with like the you know, making sure I got the right seat and that the chazan was good and that I heard and I missed the experience of what was supposed to be there because you're just doing the other things. So Rav writes, this is called Islamdus, which is being involved in something, but actually learning, being aware, being awake to that which is going on. And he says, the example that he brings is this Rambam that we just learned. You can learn through the entire Parsha, Tazria and Mitzvah, we're going to have a double Parsha. You'll get all the details straight. Focus on the Torah. The two Parshas are so intricate with all the various sizes and colors and shapes and all the things. Don't miss. The Rambam is pointing out to you at the very end, don't miss what's going on. Is a lesson in Lashon Hara. And you can miss the whole thing. You could have studied the entire Torah, the entire Parsha, and missed the primary aspect. And he writes, what the Rambam is teaching us, all of Torah is about that. All of Torah is about being able to see what's really being taught through the details of the laws. There's something else that's almost always there. And he quotes a Mishnah, a famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that I'm sure you have all heard before. Ezehu Chacham, who is considered a wise person. So the Mishnah says, Halome Mikol Adam, somebody who learns from everybody. What does it mean to be somebody who learns from everybody? Everybody. No distinction. Every single person you come into contact from, you're able to learn from them. So he brings from Rabbi Simcha Zisla from Kelm, one of the altar, the Rashi Yeshiva, the heads of the Yeshiva from the Kelm Yeshiva, the Musa Yeshiva back in Europe. So he writes, every person has interests. The easiest way to define this is your profession. Depending on whatever your profession is, you have certain interests. Person who's a tailor. So when he meets somebody, what's the first thing that he sees? He sees the quality of the suit. And just, I can't help it. That's what I see. Mm-hmm. I see that. Person is sells cars. What does he see? He sees the car that he pulled up in. That's what I know. The suit that he's wearing, I couldn't tell you if it was a jacket and a tie, if it was a two-piece suit, three-piece suit, three-buckle. I have no idea what he was wearing. Couldn't tell you if it was blue, black, green, or purple. But I could tell you the year, make, and model of the car that he pulled up in. And if you sell shoes, you'll notice the shoe that you're holding in it. And whatever you're holding in, whatever your interests are, you see that just in the world around you because what you're interested in, you notice. If you've ever had the experience of needing to buy a new car, so in the week leading up to your purchase, it's always a very difficult time in the home. Which kind of car should we buy? Should we buy this car? Should we buy that car? Should it be this color? Should it be that color? And all of a sudden, everywhere you drive, all you see are cars. Mm-hmm. You see how many people are driving the Camry versus the Odyssey versus this color is more popular than that color. And during that 3-4 week period, as you're preparing to make the purchase, you just see cars everywhere. And then as soon as you buy that car and the week goes by, you wouldn't be aware. You have no idea how many cars. Doesn't know, but because that's where your interests are, and that's what you pick up on. That's human nature. That's how we live our life. There's so many things out there in the world. We can't possibly be, into everything. But the things that grab our interest, we pay attention to. Same is true. He writes in the spiritual world. Person is working on chesed. This is what I want to be working on. I want to become a Baal Chesed. I want to be a person who's... You'll see people and acts of Chesed everywhere. You'll notice it. Someone who wants to become a better davener will notice people who daven well. People who want to live their life with a greater sense of emunah, of belief, of faith, of understanding that there's a creator in the world, will notice the people who do that, and they'll notice the things that happen to them that show that, because that's the... I'm holding that in life. And whether or not I'm looking for chesed, both the things that I do and others do, it's emunah, whatever it is, in the same way that it applies in the physical world, it applies in the spiritual world that it is. Says the Simcha Zisla from Kelm, the Mishnah is teaching you, but you have to be a lomed mikol adam, from everyone. Which means that you're not just saying, this is what I'm working on, this is what I pick up on, this is what I perceive. There is what to understand from everyone. From everything. Somebody has what to teach me about everything if I'm willing to look and to find what is it that I can gain from this. I have an interaction with a person. So maybe I wasn't thinking about dedication. But you know what? If I'd open up my eyes, I would see a tremendous amount of dedication. I'm not working on that right now. But you know what? Don't let it go by you. This is what just took place. You just came across somebody who's incredibly dedicated for whatever cause that they're dedicated to. So maybe I'm not dedicated to that cause. But look at the traits. Look at the character that I can learn from seeing that. And when you get in that habit, it's everywhere. Everybody has what to offer. There's always something to be gained from almost every interaction. Every conversation has something. But you're a chacham. The wise person is interested in all of those things and is able to pull out the nuggets, the lessons of what it is that that they gained, not just because I'm a tailor and I see the clothing that you're wearing and I can know whether or not it's a cheap quality or it's a fine quality. I can tell the type of stitching. I can tell, but I see all the stuff and I understand and I'm able to, it's of interest to me to live this world in a way that I'm constantly gaining. And the world is constantly a fresh place when you have those set of glasses on where you're on the lookout for things. The best way is to keep a little journal in which you write down one thing that I learned today from somebody, I should say. And you actually have, I have on my computer, I have a couple of pages already, and I love going back to it. It's just amazing to go back, and you totally forget about them. But then you that was a great lesson I learned from so-and-so about whatever it was that they did. And a simple example, someone told me, I had two soldiers in our house for Yontif. Guys in the U.S. Army were here over Yontif. So we hosted them for a meal. So there's been a lot to share, and a lot of things to be learned from Army life. But one of them was, they said that, in the Army, if you're not 10 minutes early, you're 5 minutes late, and it's a crime when you're not on time. You will be punished. If you have a, whatever it is that you're supposed to be somewhere, and you're not there on time, it is standard in Army life. You are there 10 minutes early for something, and you are never late. So that a private, someone who recently, entry level enlistment, so they were sharing that one of them once came late for, he was telling me he was in officer training school, this guy, and he showed up 30 seconds late to a roll call, and the squadron commander, whatever it was, called him out and says, "So I see you need to be counseled on, being on time." And the guy wanted to be like at 4:30 in the morning somewhere, for like a week or something, which is a relatively light punishment. So we asked, he was an officer training, what happens if an officer comes late? Like, what's the matter? He said, "Officers don't come late." No, he said, "No, really, what happened?" "No, you don't understand. Officers don't come late. You're just not an officer anymore. Like, there's no punishment. It's just, that's it. It doesn't happen. There's never been an officer who's still an officer who ever came late. It's just, no, part of the world." So, here we have davening. And, we don't treat davening that way. Forget about our lives and our business meetings and our general thing. Forget about that. That also we should treat the same way. If we have a rendezvous with God, let's at least start there. Shouldn't we at least treat it something like that? 10 minutes early is, all right, how about just on time? Just on time. This is something that's important. So that's a lesson which would only affect my life. You could either hear, what a great story, that's so cute, and then there's nothing there. What impact does it have? Nothing. Because I'm not working on being on time right now. I wasn't planning on working on that. So I hear a great story. Maybe it'll be a sermon one day, but it's not affecting my life. No, you have to have glasses on that say, when I hear or see things, I want to learn from everyone and everything. And you didn't think you had what to learn from some guy in an officer training school in the Army? You have plenty to learn from someone trained to be an officer in the Army. Open up your eyes and hear what he has to say, and you'll be what to figure out a way you'll be able to apply it. And the springboard for his whole discussion about this trait of being aware of what's going on is this Rambam that we read, where the Rambam goes off on this whole tangent about Lashon Hara and remembering from Miriam in the middle of a very complex 16-chapter discussion about the laws of Tzaras. He's pulling the curtain away, reminding you, don't forget what's really here. What's really here is a discussion about Lashon Hara, about the severity of Lashon Hara, about the meaning of Lashon Hara, how serious you have to take it, remember it. And this is how Hashem has his way of reminding us. And so at the end of his discussion of the laws, he has this long piece describing it, reminding us that this is how we have to approach all of Torah and all of life, to be able to see beneath the simple words of the laws that we're studying and understand the meaning, that lesson which is supposed to be there contained, underneath. And it's a pair of glasses, a lomen mikol adam, someone who's willing to learn from everybody, keep a journal, write things down. I had a group for a while where we were sharing via email. Everybody was responsible for sending one story in a day that they, learn something from someone. And it was great. People were having just great insights. Everyday conversations became so rich. So rich. Because you're on the lookout. And when you're on the lookout, everything is of value. Someone came in to my office once and said, for 43 years I've wanted to be a better wife. And it never occurred to me that leaving the office at 5 o'clock would make a difference. And so now I'm always careful to leave on time. I spoke about that at my Shabbos table for weeks. How many different ways can you look at such a statement? How many different meanings? What lessons do you learn from someone who makes a statement like that? So many levels. And it would have otherwise been a statement that, you know, in the course of a long meeting, you know, we spoke about a whole bunch of things. This was, you know, it was tangential to the context that we were discussing. But on the lookout, it became, oh, that's a line. That's great. And then you send out an email and everyone sent me, I sent it out. I said, I don't want to tell you what I think about this. Here's the quote. And I got responses from all the guys on my list. This one thought it meant like this, and this one learned this from that, and there's so much there. Life is like that. Life is rich because every comment, every conversation is full of stuff. And the Volva, his springboard for that was this Rambam that we studied, who in the end of the Laws of Tzaras has this discussion about Lashon Hara. All right, I wish you all well, a rich and meaningful day and week. Without Tzaras or Tzaras.